This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Granite Staters got their first televised side-by-side comparison of their two U.S. Senate candidates last night in a debate sponsored by the Concord Monitor and New England Cable News held at New England College. It was a substantive event covering gun control, the minimum wage, opioid abuse, health care, and each candidate's presidential nominees. Also in this high-profile race with two female candidates, both were asked why they'd be the best choice for Granite State women. Today in The Exchange, we size up the Senate debate, and we'd love your thoughts. Your questions and comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests. Meg Heckman is here, journalism lecturer at UNH, former reporter for the Concord Monitor and other publications. Meg, great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU, author of the website NH Political Capital. Dean, welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Wayne Lesperance, dean of undergraduate studies and a professor of political science at New England College. And Wayne, welcome. It was a big night for you at New England College. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. And it was. It was a great night.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on a substantive debate that moved very quickly. Your college, as we said, was the host. You were there. What'd you think?
I thought it was actually a very good debate. I think they covered a lot of ground. There was a lot of information that was shared for voters. I think that certainly there was a moment last night that social media erupted over, and I'm sure we'll get into that into some detail. But again, a very good debate, great questioners. And questions. So I was very happy with what we saw last night.
Well, okay. So since you gave us that tease, what was the moment for those who, you know, are just getting up that erupted on social media last night?
Right. So Chris Ryan, a local reporter from WKXL, asked a question, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said to Senator Ayotte, do you consider would you hold up Donald Trump as a role model for your child?
Well, let's hear what Senator Ayotte said.
I think that certainly there are many role models that we have, and I believe he's can serve as president, and so absolutely.
Again, that's Senator Kelly Ayotte at a debate last night, asked whether Donald Trump could serve as a role model for children. Now, shortly after that, Wayne, Senator Ayotte issued the following statement. I misspoke tonight. While I would hope all of our children would aspire to be president, neither Donald Trump nor Hillary Clinton have set a good example, and I wouldn't hold up either of them as role models for my kids. So that's her response shortly after that statement that we just
heard. After the debate, later that evening. And so you could see in the moment that she was obviously, there's no way you prepared for that question. That's not something that was on your radar. And I think you could see she was sort of working through it. But when she emphatically says absolutely and leaves no doubt, it was a moment. I mean, I think there was a lot of reaction in the audience, and I think that got certainly translated on TV.
Well, Meg, what'd you think overall about this event last night? 1 hour moved very quickly.
Yeah, this debate was in so many ways a reminder that this campaign is a microcosm for just the broader political conversations that we're having as a nation. I mean, it hit on everything. You had guns, you had the specter of Donald Trump, there was discussion about campaign finance, birth control, health care, opioids, everything you said at the lead into the show. And it was a really substantive and interesting hour.
What do you think, Dean?
I also thought it was a substantive hour. It hit on most of the key issues that you're hearing in the Senate race. I think even though they're both adopting a strategy of talking about bipartisanship and their ability to reach across the aisle, kind of a traditional sort of centrist New Hampshire style campaign, there was also some significant differences between the two of them that came up, and I'm sure they'll come up again in the next, I think they have four more debates left. The Ayotte moment was unfortunate for her. It was, I think, less than a minute. But as Wayne said, said, it is absolutely within an hour, it had completely blown up nationally on social media. It was agonizing to listen to. You could see her literally trying to figure her way out of the thicket as she was talking. Chris was smart enough to go back at least one more time, or even maybe even a third time, to get her to clarify. And it's unfortunate for her because the narrative in recent weeks has been that she has had success in detaching herself from the Trump narrative, that the polling in the state shows she's running way ahead of Donald Trump. It's basically a dead heat. So she's had some success about making this a race about her and Maggie Hassan in New Hampshire, not about the top of the ticket. So this is a, you know, this is a bit of a step back for her, whether it's going to have a lasting impact. You know, Wayne and I were talking earlier that we don't even know how many people really are left to sort of persuade at this point. But certainly it was unfortunate for her, and it was pretty agonizing to watch.
Well, and Meg, picking up on what you said about, you know, this race is really a microcosm for what we're seeing nationally, and you're so right. I mean, give us an example of an issue where you really thought, okay, I'm seeing that in, you know, Senate and congressional races around the country.
I think access to guns and gun laws was really a great example of that. These are two candidates with significant but in many ways nuanced differences on the issue. And that's something that we are really hearing about for a lot of reasons nationally, and really saw that last night.
Given mass shootings and concerns about that. And Dean, you've talked about this before, too. How do you hear political discussion of this gun issue changing?
Well, it's certainly a big issue, and Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket has touched on it a lot more than other recent Democratic candidates. You know, it's kind of become interwoven into this issue with terrorism and the watch lists and what kind if you're going to expand whether or not you're going to expand background checks. Whether people on these lists should be able to buy guns. And also there's an element of kind of mental health being woven into it, too, about, what gets reported to any sort of national online database for this. So it's a wide ranging discussion from Second Amendment rights all the way to, fighting terrorism in this country.
Yeah, you do hear Democrats kind of talking a lot more about this, Wayne, than they used to.
And it began in the primary process. Right. I mean, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders really mixed it up. This became a key point of differentiation. And I think what I wonder about is to what extent are voters following the nuances in the discussion. So when Kelly Ayotte in her response focuses on mental health issues and how we get that information before making a decision to sell a firearm, I'm not sure that doesn't get lost in sort of the ground clutter of all the other nuances that are out there from both sides. You know, and when you have the NRA weigh in or a gun control group weigh in, it's really either you're for it or you're against it. They're trying to portray this in very simple terms. It's not a simple issue. It's a nuanced issue. And so to have candidates talking about it in nuanced language is, from a political scientist's point of view, awesome. We want to have sophisticated conversations. I'm not sure
how that level of detail.
Right, but I'm not sure how well that translates to voters.
Meg, go ahead.
Yeah, that's one of the things I found most interesting about this race in general. Both of these candidates are experienced public figures. They are thoughtful, and they care deeply about a lot of these issues and have very different approaches to them. And we really saw that played out last night. And from a journalism perspective, it's fantastic. There are so many stories that can be told about the issues that these two candidates are bringing up.
Let's hear what they said about guns last night. Here they are, both of them, on this issue of how extensive the background check system should be. That was the subject of a lot of talk last night. So in this clip, we'll start by hearing Senator Ayotte respond to a moderator question.
Would you go further and vote to force background checks for guns sold at gun sales and online?
I believe I support that we do that, but I didn't like the solutions that came before the Senate. We do need to strengthen our background check system, starting first with getting the mental health records in and enforcing that system through more prosecutions that aren't happening right now.
Do you accept her nuanced her response to that?
Senator Ayotte has had multiple opportunities to make our country safer and to stand up to terrorists, to vote for an expanded background check bill that has had bipartisan support, and she has declined to do it.
Again, we're listening back to some clips from last night's U.S. Senate debate. Between incumbent Senator Kelly Ayotte and Governor Maggie Hassan, her Democratic challenger, we're looking at some of the themes they discussed and more broadly where this race stands. We'd love to hear from you. Whether you watch the debate or not, your impressions and thoughts are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, everybody, I was struck by how much time, Meg, going to start with you on this, by how much time was spent on contraception and so-called women's health issues in this debate. Is it just because these two candidates are women, or what do you think?
I think that certainly plays a role. I mean, identity matters in writing about candidates and looking at the issues that they're talking about. I also think it's because women as voters matter. And I think it's something that young voters, and I mean, we all work on college campuses, so I think we hear a lot from young voters. I think it's something that really resonates with young voters because it's a really concrete issue to them.
When you were a reporter, do you remember contraception coming up so much in political campaigns?
Contraception, no. Abortion, yes. And so I think I found the focus on contraception, on access to the pill and condoms and other methods really interesting.
Yeah, you're right. In the past, abortion would have taken up a lot more airtime. They did talk about that last night, but not nearly as much as contraception. Senator Ayotte was asked at the debate about her campaign's move earlier this week, where it had a table at UNH with her campaign sign on it. And then on the table were a bunch of free condoms. She was asked about this last night. Let's hear.
I've introduced legislation to expand access to birth control. And so that's the point we're making on the college campuses. And this is an idea to allow women to access birth control with FDA approval and with safety and security in mind over the counter, because I want to expand access to it. And it's a way for us to be clear with people that I support expanding that access. And I want to make sure that we look for ways to do that.
Well, and repeatedly, Governor Hassan said she hasn't expanded it. And then Ayotte came back and said, yes, I have. And it was kind of confusing. But Wayne, without digging into that hole, what did you think about a lot of attention on contraception last night?
Well,
big topic.
It was. And so the two things. First, there was this bit about the condom distribution at UNH. Senator Ayotte seemed very proud when that was brought up. And I think she was excited to sort of talk about that. But I think the other piece of this that we're missing is that this is very much linked, at least by these two candidates, to women's health. Contraception and women's health, and it's sort of another way of getting, for Maggie Hassan, getting to Planned Parenthood and where Senator Ayotte has been on that issue. It's also a way, a bridge for them to talk about the next Supreme Court justice and what implications that may have on Roe v. Wade. So this is, again, another complex issue that has a lot of touch points with other issues. It's not just about condoms at a university. By the way, there are plenty of places at a university students can get these. You don't need to go to a Senate table.
It was kind of a unique way to attract
young voters. A very
smart
way to talk to young people, I thought. And I think she was very proud of that.
I don't think in all the campaigns that I've covered I've ever seen that.
That was a first,
Meg?
For me.
Yeah?
Nope, never seen that. And there were a lot of people talking about it on the UNH campus.
Okay, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, these issues that we're talking about, contraception, paid family leave, abortion, they're all part of a set of issues that Democrats have categorized as the war against women. It's been around as kind of a central rallying point for Democrats for several presidential election cycles now, and this is sort of more the same thing. And it's interesting. I wanted to go back to a comment you made a moment ago, Laura, when you said you don't want to go into that hole in talking about kind of the legislative thicket of some of these issues. Both the discussion last night of women's issues and the gun control issue raises one of the pitfalls for any time you talk about a congressional race, in that, you know, the sort of I'm for this, no, you're against it. It really all depends on the specifics of the legislation. So, for example, on birth control, Maggie Hassan was arguing that, yes, Kelly Ayotte may support over-the-counter birth control, but she's going to take away your right to get reimbursed by your insurer. So, and the same thing on the background checks about, you know, which piece of there were, I think at one point with this sort of terror watch list, there were four pieces of legislation. So the challenge for these candidates, particularly for people who have a Senate or a House congressional record, is convincing voters without getting kind of caught in the thickets of, well, I supported this bill, but not that bill, and my bill did this, but the other bill did that. And so you saw a little bit of that last night in the sort of she said, she said, because it really was all about the details of the specific legislation. And that's a challenge, I think, for Kelly Ayotte, if she wants to make her record clear to voters, is to explain, you know, I supported this legislation. I did not support that other piece for whatever reason.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you raised that because you're right. In Congress, there's so many bills and attachments.
Votes and votes against things and for things. And there's all sorts of strategy. And it makes it – it's one reason why it's so challenging for members of Congress to run for president.
Go ahead, Wayne, and then Meg. Yeah.
Just very, very quickly. It's exactly that that leads someone to say something like, I was for it before I was against it.
Right.
We're familiar with that expression. So when Governor Hassan says you've had plenty of time, Senator Ayotte, to take these issues up and to do something about them, as she did before this discussion began, it's a great political line, but it doesn't reflect the reality of the compromise that happens in Congress. And she knows that. She also knows that it's not, there's never a win for a candidate to try to explain that intricacy from a debate stage or on the stump.
It's hard to figure out. I mean, sitting there as a listener last night, a viewer, you know, does this bill enhance access to contraception or not? And it is very difficult to figure out. And eventually the moderator says we need to move on. Right. And obviously you're a slave to the clock. But Meg, watching it, you're kind of going, OK, fact check, please, somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, we're seeing some real nuance in this race. And one of the other factors is that both of these candidates are women. And when you have two female candidates, this narrative of women's issues is a little different. Women are not the other. They are very much part of the conversation. And I think that might be part of why we're seeing nuance around this particular issue.
The issue of abortion did come up, although, as you said, Meg, briefly, something called the Hyde Amendment, which I haven't heard about in a long time. Just remind us what that was about. The Hyde Amendment coming up, gosh, I can't remember, Dean, it was a long time ago. An amendment says that federal money cannot go toward abortion.
Right. That came up last night, and I think Maggie Hassan talked about repealing the Hyde Amendment, and I think correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly Ayotte supported keeping it in place.
Right, and the Hyde Amendment says that federal money cannot go towards abortion. In other words, Medicaid.
Right.
But there are exceptions, life of the mother, and cases of
this
rape.
This usually comes
or incest.
Up in a discussion of Planned Parenthood funding. So if the federal government is going to provide support to Planned Parenthood, the conservative argument against that is, oh, this is money supporting abortion. And progressives will remind folks that there's this Hyde Amendment out there that prevents direct support for abortion services.
Okay. Well, I wish I had you guys, all of you, with me last night when I was watching it, because there was a lot to figure out. Again, the number for you to join us as we talk about last night's U.S. Senate debate is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. While we're talking about health care, all of you, Kelly Ayotte did say the Affordable Care Act has become less affordable. Costs are going up and so forth. Meg Heckman, again, I think this is another microcosm of the macro debate we're hearing. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And again, I feel like we're using the word nuance a lot, but these are two candidates who are very thoughtful about the issues that they're discussing. And I think we saw that played out in this discussion last night in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah. Give us a little bit more there, Wayne, too, how they talked about the Affordable Care Act.
So, is it really affordable? That was sort of the starting point. What are the long-term costs? Kelly Ayotte talked a little bit about folks that she's run into from New Hampshire on the campaign trail who have said, you know, I used to have a plan and I can no longer afford that. So now basically I don't have health insurance coverage. Whenever you have a policy that affects people on a macro level, there are always going to be unintended consequences. There are always going to be pieces that don't work. And so Senator Ayotte is focused on some of those things. Can we expand the pool beyond the state boundaries in order to get some economy of scale for affordability? Governor Hassan talked about being able to get pharmaceuticals from Canada, for example. So they sort of are both focusing around the edges. I didn't get a very strong sense of a repeal and replace moment last night, which we've heard from other people.
And I also think Kelly Ayotte missed a little bit of an opportunity. There have been some conservatives who argued that, Democrats are no longer interested in kind of tweaking Obamacare. They're interested in moving to single payer, that basically there's a sort of increasing consensus that the unintended consequences of the current current legislation are problematic. So conservatives want to replace and repeal to the extent they talk about how they're going to replace it. But the Democrats increasingly are interested in moving to a single payer, national system. And so this may be their opportunity. So Ayotte could have spun this as, Maggie Hassan's talking about making improvements, but what she really wants is what the Clintons want, which is to replace it with national health care.
Well,
she didn't do that.
Governor Hassan responded to Senator Ayotte's criticism again of the Affordable Care Act, Ayotte saying it's becoming unaffordable. Hassan replied with her personal experience as the mom of a son with a disability and all the expenses that has involved. Let's hear.
There is more we need to do to build on the progress we've begun with the Affordable Care Act, but we can't go back to a time when people with pre-existing conditions couldn't get care, and we need to keep our Medicaid expansion program, which is providing care to over 50,000 hardworking Granite Staters, and that would go away if the ACA were repealed.
The Medicaid expansion program, Meg, I thought that would come up more last night. That's a bipartisan effort here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, I was surprised, too, that didn't come up, particularly given Governor Hassan's long record of working on related issues. I was covering the state Senate when she was a state senator, and those were the areas where she was particularly active and really good at articulating the need for these services in a way that was very understandable and very accessible to the general public. And so I was a little surprised we didn't hear more of that, given that that is such a big part of her record.
I'd like to hear from you, too, on that, Wayne. The idea that the Affordable Care Act, Ayotte saying, is becoming unaffordable. Hassan saying, let's fix it. Medicaid didn't come up. I mean, there's a lot there that didn't get covered.
Well, that's right. Again,
and there's never time. I'm not blaming the people.
Right. No,
on
the time becomes a challenge. I mean, I long for Lincoln Douglas, but I think there'd be like four of us watching that. Senator Ayotte did talk about her own mother, right? They personalized, they both did, her own mother being on Medicare and not having any interest in having to have that conversation with mom by being for cutting those benefits. It's a little bit of a misleading thing to say that, all of that goes away. One thing Republicans seem to get is that pre-existing condition coverage is incredibly popular in the country. I have no sense that they would really seriously want to repeal that component of the Affordable Care Act. And similarly, given the job market for recent graduates from college, allowing your child to stay on your medical insurance longer is also another piece they didn't talk about, but I think would be an incredibly unpopular decision to make to want to repeal that as well. So now we have gone from the initial repeal this, this is unconstitutional, all those arguments they used to make, to now saying, well, this piece we might keep and this other piece we might keep, which is exactly to Dean's earlier point. Progressives are now moving the ball further. They want to get to single payer, and they've seen very brilliantly a plan now that leads them in that direction.
With a so-called public option under the insurance exchanges,
right?
Is that what you're talking about,
Wayne?
Yes. Yeah, and you did hear Governor Hassan last night, Dean, speaking of sort of pulling a piece out and adding a piece in. You did hear Governor Hassan agree with Senator Ayotte saying the medical device tax, she'd like to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then people who supported the Affordable Care Act back in the day, a long time ago when it was first being constructed, said, well, you need that device tax, otherwise you can't pay for some of the benefits. So I wonder what your thoughts are about people sort of adding and subtracting pieces.
It's problematic. It's complicated. We all know how difficult it is to adjust this stuff legislatively at this point. It hasn't had quite the same resonance as a campaign issue as it has in other cycles. It's still out there, but it's not driving the conversation the way it once did.
More on New Hampshire's U.S. Senate race in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire got a side-by-side view of the two candidates for U.S. Senate last night in a televised debate. This hour, what themes Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan discussed and where this race stands, let's hear from you. Your impressions and thoughts if you watched the debate, or your broader questions about just what the big themes are in this race between these two contenders. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-292-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Dean Spiliotis, Wayne Lesperance, Meg Heckman, we're going to jump back into some of the issues that came up last night. And boy, there were a lot. But let's step back for a minute. And Wayne, to you first, please. How would you describe the overall sort of narrative of this race that these two candidates are trying to craft?
Sure. I think that, you know, the way I thought about how the debate began and the leading into it, you really had the incumbent who was trying to play defense, right, who really wanted to protect her role. We've seen some polling data that has this as a dead heat. And you saw Maggie Hassan come in, and I would describe her as being loaded for bear. I mean, she came on a mission. She wanted to land gloves on Kelly Ayotte, and I think she did in a lot of ways. And so it was, I think, a more aggressive performance than I was expecting, and maybe that's just me. But when you frame it, the kinds of things that she went after Senator Ayotte about were being in the pocket of the Koch brothers, of being a Washington insider, of doing things like the Washington, what you call two-step, I think, which is a curious Texas reference in New Hampshire, but whatever. So, you know, again, to say you're not in touch with Granite Staters, you don't get us, you don't represent us, you've kind of sold out to these special interests. She kept referring to special interests in Washington. And I think Senator Ayotte had a few points where she reminded folks or tried to remind folks that she really is connected to the Granite State, that she's not a slave to party. It's an interesting thing when Governor Hassan criticized her for being in the pocket of the Republican Party. And yet reminds folks, you know, that or Kelly reminds folks that she is not has not endorsed the Republican nominee for president. But that's sort of the back and forth there in terms of the framing wars that were going on.
Well, and this was a repeated criticism, you're right, from Governor Hassan last night, saying that Kelly Ayotte is, you know, in the pocket of so-called special interests. We heard that a lot last night. We also heard Senator Ayotte say the word bipartisan many, many times. Here's what Senator Ayotte said to that repeated charge from the governor about special interests. She said, yeah, I've got special interests. Let me tell you who they are.
There are constituents like Barbara Mousset, who was a victim of identity theft and almost lost her home, and I was glad to help her. Our veterans who deserve better care. And the people of New Hampshire, I think they're very special, and that's who I fight for every single day.
Dean, what do you think about the framing that Wayne set up and from that clip that
yeah,
we just heard?
It's interesting. You know, going into this race, Kelly Ayotte is facing a very different political environment than she did when she ran the first time in 2010. 2010 was the apex of the Tea Party rebellion. She was pulled to the right by Ovid LaMontagne in the primary, and then she very easily defeated Paul Hodes in the general election. 2016 is a presidential year. Democrats in recent cycles have had good margins at presidential years. So she's just looking at a very different political landscape than when she ran in 2010. And she also has a voting record. So, it's interesting to me, having watched her closely in 2010 and sort of trying to riff off of the Tea Party energy this time around, to talk about bipartisanship being in her DNA. And every time I've had a chance to talk with her, she mentions her partnership with Jeanne Shaheen or Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia. So she's trying to run to the center. In a way that is pretty traditional. I mean, when I interviewed her for Pints in Politics a few weeks ago, she mentioned Judd Gregg and Warren Rudman as her inspirations, very different than what you would expect for a hardcore conservative. So the narrative all along has been it's a presidential year, typically all things being equal, good Democratic margins. She can't run as sort of a Tea Party outsider and win, and she's not. And I think she's embraced this. My sense is she's comfortable with this sort of reach across the aisle strategy. Trump has been sort of this kind of nagging issue for her in the background. And up until last night, she'd done a pretty good job of distancing herself. And we'll see whether there are any ripple effects from last night. I don't know.
Meg, what do you think about these repeated statements of bipartisanship and working across the aisle and coming together?
I think it makes it a very New Hampshire kind of race. Mm-hmm. And in so many ways, as I was reading about this debate and listening to clips, it's a real reminder of some of the early congressional races that I covered maybe 10 or 15 years ago when I first started as a journalist. It reminds me a lot of some of the early Bass Hodes races and some other races before that, where you have both fairly moderate candidates, both really trying to distinguish themselves in a very New Hampshire kind of way.
Do you think Kelly Ayotte has evolved into a moderate? As Dean said, in her first campaign, she didn't come across as a moderate.
Yeah, I do. I do think she's at least evolved her image as a moderate, and I suspect that there's some meat to that too. We were talking earlier about the compromises that are necessary when you are trying to govern, and I think she's bringing up a lot of examples of that to make the bipartisan point, but also because she's lived it for the last 6 years.
Who is that message aimed at, Wayne? I'm bipartisan. I'll work across the aisle.
Independent voters, the folks right in the middle that are going to decide this election.
Very few independent voters still out there, really?
Well, I guess the question is, what we don't know is how many folks haven't made up their mind yet. I think Dee mentioned this at the beginning of the show. But I think this is the demographic that they really need to speak to. She's Senator Ayotte is absolutely trying to appeal to that, you know, moderate voter that doesn't lean hard one way or the other, maybe leans a little bit to the right, and sort of speak to them. And I think that that's the whole point of focusing on that bipartisanship.
Yeah, we'll never really know for sure. You use the word evolve. Who knows? You know, when she first ran, she was attorney general. She'd been attorney general under both Benson and Lynch. We didn't know how she was going to present herself. It was 2010, and she didn't have much choice except to come out as sort of a conservative. This may be closer to her natural inclination. We don't really know. But for whatever reason, she's embraced it this time around, because it's just running in a presidential year in New Hampshire is very different than running in a midterm.
Go ahead, Wayne.
She'll also use the word pragmatism, and I think that is as New Hampshire as it gets. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that voters would respond to. So bipartisanship is you know, one of those political terms that everybody puts out there one way or another. But I think that's pragmatism that she'd really like us to sort of see in her role in the Senate. And I think that's something that voters do respond to.
Well, Wayne, you mentioned that you were a little surprised by how heavily Governor Hassan came out on Senator Ayotte. And certainly Senator Ayotte was talking about what she did in the Senate. And Governor Hassan would repeatedly come back and say, well, here's where I have a difference, or here's where she's not telling you. Do you think that Governor Hassan went too hard on Senator Ayotte? Did she come across, Dean, as the sort of too much attacking and not enough talking about what she would do?
Well, it is interesting, and I think Wayne mentioned this earlier. She has been pretty aggressive. I think particularly for the first half of the debate, I think it took Kelly Ayotte almost 20 to 25 minutes to actually directly address a criticism at Governor Hassan. Sort of the first part of the debate was, you know, Kelly Ayotte talking to voters directly into the camera and then Governor Hassan kind of attacking her. I think that's her. That's you know, her strategy. I think she has to do some of that. Was she too aggressive? Given the kinds of aggression we've seen in this election cycle, probably not in the grand scheme of things. I didn't think it was too much. In fact, it struck me more that Kelly Ayotte was doing very little of it, more so than Hassan. Came in with this sort of set of, you know, talking points about here are all the reasons why Kelly is problematic.
And we need to be careful, Laura, because one of the problems that we have collectively is that when a woman candidate is aggressive in a debate, that's something that we tend to notice more and we tend to talk about more. I don't know that I would have had that same reaction had that been a male candidate. So let me admit that up front, that yeah, it did stick out to me, but I don't know how much of that is just a gender issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for saying that, Wayne, because I think acknowledging our own biases around identities of candidates is really important, particularly as we see the practice of politics diversifying in a lot of important and interesting ways. And I think that races like this are going to go a long way towards helping us overcome those biases. And I mean, I am certainly a victim of those biases also. I had the same reaction, like, wow, Hassan's really tough. And I don't know if I would have said that about a male candidate.
But I don't think it was out of bounds or over the top.
No,
I thought it was sort of fairly standard. Yeah.
Yeah, not at all.
Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love your questions, comments, thoughts about the U.S. Senate race here in New Hampshire, especially since we did see that televised debate last night. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Len sent us a note on Facebook. He says, why won't Senator Kelly Ayotte vote for a SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the U.S.? Just remind us what's going on there, Meg, that whole Merrick Garland issue. It's kind of fallen off from the news recently.
Well, there is a nominee, and he is caught in some type of congressional purgatory right now for various political reasons. And the argument that people in favor of having a confirmation vote would say is Obama is still president, and therefore he has the right to pick a Supreme Court justice. And the people opposed would tell you that because we are so close to the end of the president's term, it should wait until after January.
And Senator Ayotte said last night, look, we've got divided government. We've got a Republican Congress and a Democratic White House. We've got a 4-4 court split in terms of appointees and so forth, Wayne. So she said, let's just hold off.
Right. So well, let's let – I think the words – phrase she used last night was let's let the people decide and we'll have an election. I wonder how much they stick to that if Hillary Clinton wins in November.
They'll rush him through in
a lame duck
session.
If there'll be a rush to confirm
it. As good as they're going to get.
Because he's – you know, I think fairly – he is a fairly moderate jurist. He's not an extremist either way. I think there are visions among some Republicans that they could somehow find an Antonin Scalia replacement. That's just not going to happen. And, you know, we'll see what happens after the election.
Can I just say –
Sure, go ahead.
This, from a constitutional perspective, this argument that you need a bonus weighing in by voters to go through a constitutionally determined process, it makes no sense to me. I thought it was ridiculous when Democrats made the same argument back in the day. I don't find it persuasive now. Obama's been elected twice. It's part of his constitutional duty to nominate, and then the Senate can advise and consent. If they don't want to consent to the guy, they don't have to consent. But the idea that the people should weigh in, it's not in the Constitution. It doesn't say if the nomination comes in with the last year of a president's term, you need an extra vote just to make sure. He was elected in 2012. This is his constitutional prerogative. I don't understand the argument.
Well, Len, thanks for the Facebook comment. And let's go to the phones. Jim's joining us from Jackson. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I understand Senator Ayotte is trying to portray herself as a bipartisan. And in fact, in my experience, she has worked with Senator Shaheed. But the image I have of her early on is standing at a stage with Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and Mitch McConnell. And I can't get that picture out of my mind, which doesn't lend itself to bipartisanship.
Well, John McCain, known for working with the other side. Jim, what do you think about that?
Well, I agree.
And Lindsey Graham to some extent, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying that standing there with three well-known Republicans is just an image I can't get out of my mind. It's hard to understand the bipartisanship, and I think she suffers from that image in my mind, anyways.
Okay.
And from my experience, she has worked with Senator Shaheen when I've gone down to discuss defense matters.
Jim, thank you very much for calling in. Boy, the pictures. My mailbox, Meg, is stuffed with these sometimes very scary-looking pictures that I get from the outside groups. And Jim's right. I have gotten more than one ad in my own mailbox. I get ads from everybody. Look, showing Kelly Ayotte with those three senators that our caller mentions.
Absolutely. And I think it's a sign of how visual politics is now that we are all consuming information, not just based on what we get in our mailbox, but what we see on Facebook, on our Twitter feeds, and those little ads that follow you around the web while
right.
you're shopping
everywhere.
Or reading or whatever. And I think it makes the optics around these campaigns and these candidates' records even more of a factor.
So what do you think, Wayne, the ads that we see of Kelly Ayotte, always unattractive photos of those three other gentlemen that our caller mentions, but Kelly Ayotte can't, you know, present ads of herself with Jean Shaheen.
Well, she could. She talks about it. I mean, certainly the work they have done around the opioid crisis, the work they have done around Portsmouth Naval Base, that's certainly bipartisan. It's in the interest of the Granite State. She has talked about it. But at the end of the day, she is a Republican, and she does work with her Republican partners in the Senate. Interestingly, I would say that the Trump wing of the Republican Party still likes to call John McCain a rhino and say he's not really Republican enough. So for our caller to say, you know, it bugs me to see her with those guys. It's an interesting thing. Images, you know, are static in some way. We all receive them differently. And for him, he's receiving it one way. But I think that there are conservatives out there that would see that image in a very different way. Also bad, but for very different reasons.
You know, one of the images that Republicans have put out there, especially Senator Ayotte, about Governor Hassan, and we've gotten questions about this too, is that she's too careful, too scripted, doesn't ever sort of speak in a genuine way. And Dean, she's gotten hit on that by Kelly Ayotte a couple times. This morning, the Ayotte campaign again came out and said, well, there she was again, just being wooden and scripted. Is that a narrative that's going to bother voters?
I'm not sure. It's certainly a narrative that's been out there for a while, and it kind of culminated in that viral CNN moment where she had real trouble sort of answering straight question about Hillary Clinton's honesty. You know, I've interviewed her a number of times over the years, and it is true it can be challenging sometimes to pin her down on a particular issue. She likes to leave herself some wiggle room in terms of sort of her final decision. But, you know, John Lynch was very much the same way. You never were quite sure sort of where he stood on some of these issues until the last minute. So it's certainly a style of executive governance. Is there a potential danger that it won't contrast favorably with Kelly Ayotte's more kind of direct, I'm Kelly from New Hampshire sort of approach, very personalized, sort of not, you know, kind of taking party out of the campaign narrative as much as possible? Perhaps. I thought she was a little bit better last night than I've seen her on other occasions in terms of being direct. But, you know, that comes with many years of sort of habit, and it's hard to undo. So I'm sure her campaign is going to try to help her to be careful of that, because AI tends to be sort of very direct and kind of, you know, person-centered rather than sort of party or process-centered.
Yeah. What do you think, Meg?
And I also wonder if the wooden critique may be a little bit gendered, too, and in many ways echoes what we hear about Hillary Clinton on the national level.
Give us a little more there.
Well,
for people who haven't been following it as closely.
You know, I think Dean made a really good point that in many ways there are a lot of similarities between Hassan and Lynch when you're interviewing them. And I think that's absolutely true.
Speaking from experience,
yeah,
right?
You don't always know until the last minute. And I don't quite remember hearing similar labels attached to Lynch as we are to Hassan.
Interesting. I did want to return to the issues with all of you, because there were a couple more that I really want to talk about. One, Wayne, that did not come up as much as I thought it would last night was the Ayotte campaign's point that that Governor Hassan is inexperienced on foreign policy, and that this is a critical time with threats from ISIS, and that, you know, we need to put someone in Washington who understands these threats. And certainly Senator Ayotte has a resume on security matters and foreign policy.
I think if
Senator, I was surprised that didn't come up more.
I was too, and I think Senator Ayotte would very much have liked to have had, you know, an hour debate on just that issue, because this is where she really hangs her hat, that you know, she has experience in the United States Senate. She has a husband that's a former fighter pilot. She can draw from personal experiences there. And it's not something, while the governor does command the mighty New Hampshire National Guard, it's not usually a recipe for foreign policy experience. And there are obviously some very key issues out there in the world, whether it's ISIS, it's Syria, whatever, that Senator Ayotte has been thoughtful about, that has talked a lot about. Dean mentioned when we did the interview with her at Pints and Politics, she spent a lot of time talking about foreign policy. She wants to emphasize that record. And she didn't. She didn't take opportunities to pivot there either, although the moderator was very keen on observing the time. So there wasn't a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, there was just a little bit of talk about ISIS. And Senator Ayotte did very briefly mention the Iran nuclear deal, but that was kind of it. All right. Well, you're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. More on New Hampshire's U.S. Senate race in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the two candidates for U.S. Senate from New Hampshire met last night in a televised debate. We're finding out what issues Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan discussed and where this race stands. We'd love to hear from you. Your thoughts, questions, comments are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests with us in studio. Meg Heckman's here, journalism lecturer at UNH, former reporter for the Concord Monitor and other publications. Wayne Lesperance, dean of undergraduate studies and a professor of political science at New England College, where the debate was held last night. Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU and author of the website NH Political Capital. And here's an email that just came in from Suzanne, who says, the point of last night's debate that stood out to me was the conversation on healthcare costs. This is a concern for me and my family. Ayotte criticized the Affordable Care Act while Hassan defended it. Do you think the rising health care costs will play a role at all in this election, or at least more than it already has? Suzanne, it's a great question. And Dean, I'll turn to you on that.
Hard to say. My gut says probably not. I mean, most of the polling data that I see suggests terrorism, foreign policy, sort of economy and jobs broadly defined are always the top issues. Healthcare is somewhere just a little bit below that. I think at this point, you know, the Affordable Care Act was passed, what, like 2009 or something like that?
2010 it was signed.
It's 2010. Yeah, it's 6-7 years ago. It's just sort of a status quo now. I think that, as we were saying earlier, the debate has changed. It's more about, there seems to be more agreement that it might not be sustainable in the long term, but Democrats, I think, are going to shift to go towards a public option or single payer. You hear less about kind of what to replace it with if you repeal, and you hear Republicans talk about, you know, maybe making some changes because, as Wayne said, they know certain provisions are popular. So it seems to be kind of a slow kind of drip as a political issue and not really driving the conversation. So, you know, we're basically a month away from the election. I'm not sure what would change in the next month to suddenly give it increased resonance. You know, it's an issue, but it just doesn't feel like it's driving things the way it was back in certainly midterm 2010, 2014, and then the presidentials.
The repeal and replace. Yeah, go ahead, Meg. Love your thoughts.
It often feels like a story we hear and see more about in between presidential election years. It's something that I know journalists often delve into. And I think one of the reasons why is because healthcare is something that affects everyone. Like we were talking about before, it's a very easy issue to personalize. It is often a type of storytelling that you can do that becomes a lens for understanding government bureaucracy and the impact of federal policy at the local level. And I think that takes a little bit more time than we have during a typical election season.
Well, and Wayne, last night, Senator Ayotte mentioned that costs are going up. Again, she repeated the Republican line that we often hear, that the Affordable Care Act has been anything but. So it does make me wonder about Suzanne's question. You know, as people are paying more, as the re-enrollment period begins in November, you know, we have heard that people are going to be in for some nasty surprises.
Well, and what you just said, the re-enrollment period in November, right? So for that to have an impact on the election, it's too late. I think the answer to Suzanne's question is not yet. It's not impacting. It won't have a significant impact in this particular election. But depending on what happens November and beyond, depending on how much this goes from being an anecdote here about this person or this business to something that's more systemic, more widespread, we're not seeing the kind of voter backlash that you would have seen.
Republicans argue it's not sustainable, but we don't really know how long that not sustainability plays out over how many years.
Right. So, you know, like a lot of issues that we've been talking about as being crisis, Social Security, right, for example, they tend to have go on and on and on, and the public's tolerance for that is there. So I think to Suzanne, it's not yet. That doesn't mean it's always going to be this way.
Well, Suzanne, thank you for the email. And let's take another caller. This is Lynn in Exeter. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, Lynn.
I have a concern that Kelly Ayotte says that she does not endorse Donald Trump. However, she does support him. And practically, I don't see the difference. If you support someone, you hold them up, you say you agree with them. Support to me is not a whole lot different from endorsement. And last night, she said that Donald Trump is a role model for our children, which I just find appalling. And then later, she tried to draw that back. But in practically, she does support all of the Republican agenda and Donald Trump.
And Lynn, it sounds like you wouldn't have supported Kelly Ayotte anyway, regardless of all the Trump factor.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's fair to say.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for calling in. And we did get an email from Kyle, also on the role model issue. He says it doesn't make Kelly Ayotte look good saying Trump is a good role model. Then after saying he's not, can you say flip-flop? So obviously, Democrats are going to, you know, feel one way about Kelly Ayotte. Republicans are going to feel another way. What about the independent voter, Dean? I mean, I don't know, the 1 or 2 or 3% out there, does this whole Trump flip-flop make a difference?
Boy, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, this issue with her support or lack thereof of Trump has been around for months now. This is just kind of the latest iteration. It had really kind of receded. You know, in her mind, when she says I'll support him, it means basically I'll vote for him. And, you know, to be honest, who knows what she'll actually do right. in the privacy of the voting booth. She may be annoyed enough with this whole situation.
Unless she takes a ballot selfie.
Yeah, exactly. We'll never know. I mean, that's her vote choice is private. But what she's saying publicly is I'll vote for him, but that's basically it. And endorsing in her mind implies, you know, sort of more actively campaigning and advocating for the individual.
Sure. But like Newt Gingrich Rudy Giuliani, sort of going on the talk shows and going to the rallies and so
forth. Yeah. So, I mean, this is just sort of more of the same issue. If anything, I think maybe the independent voters, they tend to decide late. They tend to pay less attention to politics. You know, maybe they'll decide based more on just kind of sort of New Hampshire style criteria about who they think would do a better job for kind of, you know, things that New Hampshire needs or sort of their vision of the future of the state rather than kind of these larger party issues.
Well, a couple more issues that came up last night. And again, there were a lot there. The fact, Wayne, that this is an extremely expensive race came up. Now, just remind us how this came up for folks who didn't watch.
So certainly when you talk about somebody being in the pocket of corporate interest, we talked about, there was a lot of talk about the Koch brothers. But the broader conversation moved to, you know, an effort by both sides to find a common ground to sort of reject outside money, to say we don't want outside money being spent. I think we're on track to have about $100 million spent in this election, outside money. That's huge, and it could put New Hampshire at the very top of Senate expenditures. So it's going to be – there's going to be a lot of money coming into it. We've all been the beneficiary, as you've said. Our mailboxes are full of the products of this spending.
Beneficiary isn't the word I'd use,
okay.
But yeah.
It makes for good kindling if you're starting a fire.
Okay.
I just want to put
there
that
we go.
There. And certainly on the television ads, we're seeing a lot of this. It's part of politics these days. It's a lot of money being spent by folks who want to influence the race.
Well, and both of them were asked about it last night. Senator Ayotte said, look, I tried to adopt this so-called People's Pledge that they did in Massachusetts with Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown. It worked to keep outside money out there. I tried to get it in place here. Governor Hassan didn't want to, and so it's her fault. Here, Governor Hassan responded to a question about whether she has asked any outside money groups to remove any anti-Ayotte ads that she felt maybe just went too far. Let's hear.
I am unaware of any that I have seen that strike me as inaccurate. What you just heard Senator Ayotte a few minutes ago talk about was that she has been saying one thing about her position on women's health while her record really demonstrates something different. But what I think is important here is for people to understand that Senator Ayotte supports Citizens United and has voted against the Federal Disclose Act, something I would vote to support because we should get more money out of politics.
So Meg Heckman, Senator Ayotte, in her turn, reminded people that she, in fact, did ask for an ad to be pulled.
I think I found this exchange very interesting in how it was framed in the write-ups of the debate. We saw a lot of really good fact-checking around these statements, and I think that is an interesting and important trend that we're seeing more and more of. I think I saw a headline on a News About the News digest that said fact-checking is the new black, meaning it was very trendy and in. And I found that very useful because campaign finance, I try and follow it closely, but it's really nuanced and complicated. And so in looking at this exchange, I was very grateful for those fact checks because it placed it in context for me.
Dean, do you want to jump in on that too? The emphasis during the debate on money and politics. They spent a fair bit of time on this.
Yeah, well, it's a recurring issue. It's just, you know, as I like to say, nobody's willing to unilaterally disarm. Everybody says it's problematic, yet they take millions of dollars of outside money. It's interesting to me. Many years ago, I co-authored an article on money in New Hampshire. This was back in the 90s. And at the time, our conclusion was that sort of the political environment in New Hampshire and the campaign finance laws were such that there was not a lot of room in the discourse in the state for outside money. You know, boy, has that changed over the last 15 to 20 years. It's going to be, you know, if not, you know, certainly the most expensive Senate race, we've had in New Hampshire. It runs the risk of the candidates sort of losing control of the message. We get these outside ads that sometimes I wonder, what state are they actually referring to? Because that's not the state I live in. These outside groups don't necessarily have a good feel of what's going on the ground. So, I think it's problematic. Everybody kind of, wrings their hands over it, but no one's going to stop doing it. And I think even though, we saw last night Maggie Hassan try to tie Kelly Ayotte to the Kochs and others, I think the average voter is just like sort of – everybody does this. It's just there's so much money. I personally think a lot of it is wasted. But nonetheless, it can have all these kinds of unintended sort of civic consequences in the state.
Well, we talked about that after the 2012 election, right, yeah. Dean? There was a lot of money spent in favor of Mitt Romney.
Absolutely. Hundreds of millions of dollars didn't make a difference.
Go ahead, Wayne.
I think just like those pieces of mail you get, you recognize them for what they are and you push them aside.
Kindling.
It is kindling, right. And so we can't quite do that with television ads, but we'll find a use for them. If you go to other states who have tough elections, you'll see those exact same ads, but the names and faces are different. That's the only difference. These are
really
cookie cutter, and they pop in, the different candidates. So that these groups are very smart at what they do. I don't think it makes a whole heck of a lot of difference other than being a stimulus package for the ad guys around town. But that's
well,
about it.
There you go. And I'm going over to Maine this weekend, so I will make sure I check that out. So, Meg, you're a journalism professor. What are you going to tell your students to watch as this particular race unfolds, this U.S. Senate race?
Well, it's interesting. At first, I start with telling them that there are races going on that are not Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump.
Right.
Because
important
that
point.
Race just seems to be taking up so much of the oxygen. And I tell them, look for context, understand that political journalism is about navigating conflicting narratives and that the truth is often in the middle of those narratives.
How often do you find your students using those fact-checked opportunities?
All the time. And I've actually used some of those political mailers, not as kindling, but as props in the classroom. I bring them in and ask them to do a little bit of fact-checking around these pieces of mail. And it's a good lesson, even for the students who have no interest in going undercover politics, that the truth is a multifaceted thing.
That's another use for those mailings. Mm-hmm. See, Wayne, there's
this is
two
a
uses.
Public service now we're providing.
All of you, it's been great to see you. Thank you so much for being here. Meg, thanks for your time.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. Meg Heckman, she's at UNH. Wayne L'Esperance, again, thank you for being with us, especially after your college hosted the debate last night.
Thanks, Laura.
Wayne L'Esperance with New England College and Dean Spiliotis. Always good to see you. Thank
sure
you.
Sure thing, Laura. Yep.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at SNHU. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.